Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
If there's anything in South Africa we should never take for granted, is the fact that we do have heightened levels of media freedom. Yes, at times, certain circumstances do bring it into question. But for the large part, we really are a country that has the ability for the media to fully express itself. Now, what if I told you, if the government stopped funding the SABC, that it would shut down? Well, that's not too far-fetched, especially if we take into account that this is exactly what's happening to some media organizations in the United States. Essentially, some shifts and changes in policy from the Congress under the leadership of U.S. President Donald Trump to defund certain media organizations and public initiatives has led to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, commonly known as PBS. It's a news network and station, public media, that will no longer receive funding from the U.S. government and Congress, and as a result will be closing down after its existence for more than three generations. To talk to us about this and help us understand why they're being defunded, what outcomes have led to this, we are joined by a good correspondent and friend of the show, Pearl Matibe, Washington, D.C.-based foreign correspondent, to help us unpack this story. Pearl, welcome to the show.
It's always great to be here. Yeah, no, for sure. Thanks for the invitation and an important conversation at that.
Yes, definitely a critical conversation. I'm aware that we're about 6 hours in difference in terms of the time zone, but maybe let's get straight to it, right? Trump, the White House and Congress deciding to defund certain institutions, a few of which that are impacted being media. Help us add context, firstly, to this decision and how it was made.
Okay, so I think what I'll do is I will try and help the listeners understand the U.S. decision to cut funding to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, also called CBP, mm-hmm. right? But I'm going to give it from the perspective of the Trump administration and the thinking behind the president's order. Okay, so let me just begin. So why did this happen, right? So on May the 1st, 2025, this year, President Trump signed an executive order, which is in itself is titled Ending Taxpayer Subsidization of Biased Media. That's the title of his executive action. So the administration believes that public funds should not support platforms, media platforms, that claim or reflect a partisan or an ideological bias. So that is the sort of like the core root to answer the question, why did this happen at all? And so in understanding the entity that is Corporation for Public Broadcasting, in itself is not technically PBS or NPR. It's more than one. So what is it? It's a nonprofit that distributes the money that they get from the government, from the federal government here in the United States, to U.S. public media. So PBS is one of those. NPR is another. So the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was created back in 1967 to ensure that all Americans, especially those that live in rural areas, some of them are sort of in underserved communities, but that they could access educational and cultural pro-President Trump's executive order does. What does it say? His order accuses public broadcasting organizations and that it supports these platforms as having, quote, pervasive ideological bias, end quote, and that they are failing to be neutral. That's the reasoning, the rationale behind his order. It instructs all government agencies throughout America to begin phasing out all the support to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So what has happened since May 1? NPR, which is like PBS, a different media platform, has itself confirmed that they're already shutting down. We're expecting, Gubuletu, that their NPR's operations will completely shut down by September 30. So PBS
completely
shut down. So anyone trying to access information or their websites, I don't think you can have access to that. So if there's information you're looking on for NPR, you may want to do that before September 30 comes rolling around, because all those things are just going to be completely shut down. PBS, you mentioned in your lead up, is in ongoing talks with donors and other affiliates to see if PBS can somehow stay afloat without the money from the government. So people working in local radio or television stations for PBS or NPR will likely be affected jobs-wise. Back to you.
This reaches so many consequences, especially for those in the media, which we'll touch on in just a moment. But as you've said, there's reasoning behind the Congress as to why they've taken this particular decision. Has their reasoning and justification been questioned or challenged at all?
So I just want to clarify a very important distinction. So Congress, right, is the legislative body where the lawmakers are. This executive order is not made by lawmakers. This executive order is from the president, the head of state of the United States of America. It came out of the White House. So the White House, the president signed his instructions, and his instructions clearly start at the top. They say the purpose. So he explains what his purpose is in doing this. Then it explains the instructions that he expects to people should follow. If anybody disobeys the president's executive order, then, of course, that is committing tantamount to treason, really, to being against the national interest of the United States, because the president has put his pen to paper and signed this off. So, you know, if we want to, you know, ask the question, okay, so, you know, what might be the broader implications? In U.S. public broadcasting history or historically, PBS and things like NPR and so on have always served almost like a civic tool because they support community news, children's education. If there's an emergency, fires or flooding, hurricanes, weather-related, they do like emergency broadcasting. So if there's an emergency that needs to be sent out to the community, these are platforms that will broadcast these things, right? So removing the government funding means that there'll be a shift in how populations and communities, neighborhoods will access information of that type, right? And they would have to then maybe access that information that normally would be broadcast through PBS and NPR. They may have to go to some other commercial broadcaster to try and get that news, because these media tools or platforms will just basically not be there. Right. So essentially, that is really what we're looking at here. I know earlier you were talking about, you know, can people imagine or fathom if SABC was shut down? SABC is more a state supported broadcasting platform. Remember, this entity that we're talking about in the United States is a nonprofit. So the way it's incorporated, right, the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, it's not a government entity. It's a nonprofit organization who receives money and funding from the government. So it's the government choosing here to say, we're not going to support you anymore. But the thing is, without that money, NPR has to shut down, you know? So I think that's the thing. So if you ask the question, okay, does this look like censorship by, you know, critics out there in the discourse, in the discussion, here's what I would sort of try to explain here to try and increase the understanding. Because I think what's important, Google, too, is yes, people may debate media freedom and so on. I'm simply here trying to explain the intent and the motivation behind President Trump's thinking in saying this is what I want and must be carried out. Okay, so saying it's censorship, yes, there's that interpretation which you've raised and which others will certainly raise for a good reason. But from the Trump administration's viewpoint, from where they sit, from behind in the Oval Office, from President Trump's desk, right? This is about budget discipline. They're looking at it as they're redirecting money that American taxpayers pay these media platforms for what President Trump's views as being biased. So it's less to him about, he doesn't view it as censorship. He's viewing it as being a fiscal realignment. Like he's being fiscally responsible that people who pay taxes should not pay money to a media outlet that he views as being biased.
I appreciate this, Paul, because you're right. You know, we can have a whole different discourse around whether it's right, whether it's wrong. Is it censorship? And of course, I guess being media professionals like ourselves, we're very passionate about this because we understand the unintended or intended consequences. But as you say, this is just an understanding of what has happened, why we've come around here, and how the structure in terms of the level of support is different to state-owned entities in South Africa. And I appreciate that you've actually ironed that out, that we actually do have clarity that in the eyes of the president, and given that this is an executive order, number one, you can't necessarily override it. It's an executive order, as you say. The president says, so it must happen. And this is a realignment in the president's eyes of public funds that will be channeled elsewhere. What I'm keen to understand is what has happened since the signing of this executive order. You've mentioned that some of the media entities are speaking to funders, but where are we now in terms of the developments and what could be potential factors that could sway the outcomes in either direction?
Before I move to that question, certainly the only other way to sort of change the direction of this would be for whomever might become the next president, right? So the only way to rescind an executive order would be for the next president to revert that order, right? Because it's signed by a president. You'd have to be a president to sign it out of order, basically. See what I mean? Just like President Trump, when he came in after inauguration, things that Biden had put in place, things that President Obama had put in place, he's removed or reverted back. So another president coming in could then come in and say, okay, we want to revive these things back. Maybe there's that opportunity. You know, that would depend on the next president what he wants to do. But talking about the broader implications that you mean, as I mentioned, NPR has already on their websites and already publicly stated that they are confirming that they will shut down their operations by September 3rd. So they've already made a public statement about this. PBS, on the other hand, I think have been having talks and reaching out to likely possible other donors, maybe private donors, to see if there's some money to keep some semblance of it or some smaller version of it afloat. It may not look like the PBS we already know, but I would imagine that likely the ripple effects or the impact of this, of course, will be significant because PBS, these two, they indirectly support well in excess of 20,000 media jobs, journalists, photographers, people that work in the media space. And in small towns, this could be a big deal, right? In small towns all across America. So I would imagine that smaller news stations, smaller radio stations, smaller print media will certainly have to shut down those that depend on PBS and NPR in the locals. Or maybe they might be lucky and be able to find some private funder. But without the government from the U.S., United States government funding them, they would have to reach out to private funding. To what extent that's available, that's another question. You know, and just to answer again this question of, say, for example, if people out there asking the question, is Trump trying to silence critics? Because he's the core of the purpose, as it's written in the White House document, the executive order itself, is that it's ideological, right? I think from the Trump administration's viewpoint, and I'm saying this factually, just based on what they have published, what the White House has published publicly. So it's publicly available information. It's not a secret. So from the administration's public statements, their own statements, their argument is framed around ideological balance, number one. Number two, taxpayer fairness, that this money to him, he's saying, I'm trying to be responsible with taxpayer money, and he's not framing or categorizing or characterizing it as silencing. So whether that holds up depends on how things unfold. Whether, you know, whether PBS and NPR might want to take it to court, it doesn't sound like NPR's doing that because they've said that they shut him down, right? I don't know, you know, what may happen if somebody went to sue in court or if a lawmaker in Congress, remember in Congress, the Republicans are the ones in the majority. And right now, I don't see it likely that any Republican lawmaker is going to go against their president, the leader of their political party. The political party that has the majority in Congress and in the body that legislates, the body that has oversight, are Republicans. And the leader of that Republican Party is who? It's President Trump. He's the leader of their political party. It's like saying, are people in Parliament and the ANC going to go against President Cyril Ramaphosa? He's the leader of the ANC, of the political party that is in power. I know there's like a coalition right now, but anyway, but you get my meaning, right? So,
yeah,
you know, how many of those people holding seats in the legislative body will stick their necks out to say we're going to go against the leader of our political party? I think that's political suicide right now in America. For another Republican lawmaker to say that they're going to go against President Trump. Like, they're not going to win another election. Because if they do that, President Trump is going to, what we call here, primary them. If there's another primary election, that person that sticks their necks out trying to go against President Trump is not going to make it in the next primary election.
My goodness, Paul.
So this has to provide so much more perspective. Would these lawmakers be brave enough to stick their necks out, knowing that they may tank in the next primary election against another one of their own party? Or President Trump may pick another person to stand against him in another primary. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, the U.S. primaries are next year, so it's fairly close, less than a year and a half to go.
So you could view it maybe as being political, right? Because people's political futures are at stake. And I would imagine that President Trump certainly hopes that, he's likely not running, he's been talking about a third term, but, you know, at this stage, lawmakers will either have their career, their lawmaking career cut short, or a battle right now against President Trump is not a winning, I don't know to what extent that's a winning card that you want to play. Against people within your own party. Hmm. Because Democrats
this
don't
is so
have a majority.
True. Yes, they don't.
And this executive order letter came directly from the White House. The president himself signed the order. It's an executive order in the United States is an action taken by the president. The one person. So it's a presidential action. It's not something that he consulted with lawmakers and said, okay, maybe we do this, that. It's what the president decided, right?
Hmm.
So this was on May 1st, not too long ago, and it is the authority vested within the Constitution. The Constitution and the laws of the United States of America allows the president...
So similar to the pooling of the funding for the USAID, that would be correct?
100%, yes. And it articulates at the beginning its purpose... I'll just say quickly again, its purpose says that National Public Radio, which is NPR, and the Public Broadcasting Service, PBS, receive taxpayer funds through what entity? The entity is Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And so he says here, government funding of news media, I'm quoting straight from the executive order, quote, government funding of news media in this environment is not only outdated, is what President Trump thinks, he says, and unnecessary, but corrosive to the appearance of journalistic independence. So we have to, you've worked in media for a long time. This means that interrogating what does it mean to be a journalist, to have a journalist, the output, the product that you put out. The things that people have long held about press freedom and all of those things. This is the White House expressing exactly the motivation, how they read what is happening, right? So it justifies the purpose here and says, quote, at the very least, Americans have the right to expect that if tax dollars fund public broadcasting at all, they fund only fair, accurate, unbiased, and nonpartisan news coverage. This is language in the executive order. So you understand the framing here, right? The president is accusing these two companies of failing to abide by failing to be neutral.
Yeah.
Basically. If you want to put it down to a nutshell, one word. It's accusing them.
Yeah. We'll have to leave it there for tonight. But I really am appreciative of the fact that you've given us so much detail and understanding the nuances and the context and the detail and the facts of what has been published. And again, you know, any other themes that we want to discuss and explore, we can. But fundamentally, we're dealing with the facts and actually how it's been delivered so far. Leaves a very uncomfortable taste in the mouths of many media practitioners in South Africa. But yeah, we will continue to evaluate how this does unfold. And as you say, from the White House, from the office of the president. So it's an executive order. But thank you again for your time and really giving us some perspective into this conversation. That's Pearl Matibe, Washington, D.C. based foreign correspondent, who's given us a lot more detail into the closure, or rather the defunding of media organizations in the U.S. that receive taxpayers' money. Similar to what we saw with USAID, USAID. That's exactly what's happening here.
Kaya Biz with Gugule Tumfuphi, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Kaya 959.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.